Audio for the Retro Computing Roundtable is hosted by CyberEars. When you need a rock-solid platform to host and distribute your podcast or other audio media, head over to CyberEars.com. Fast, reliable hosting with unlimited bandwidth. CyberEars is your audio on your terms.
It's May 10th, 2015, and welcome to episode 100 of the Retro Computing Roundtable.
Well, it seems the Emerald City is far behind me now, and my world has changed back from black to white. But no matter where I go, there's just one thing I like to know.
The RCR is a podcast about retro computer news, nostalgia, and collecting. And we've got our typical group of irregular regulars sitting around the table. I'm Earl Evans. I'm in Portland, Oregon, where it looks like the sun is actually coming out, and it's going to be in the mid-70s today. Atypical weather for this time of year, but I'm not going to argue. Around the globe, we're joined by Michael Mulhern, our wonder from down under. How are you today, Michael?
Oh, it's excellent down here. It's Goldilocks weather. Not too hot, not too cold. It's beautiful in Sydney.
Awesome. That's great to hear. And what about Stockholm, where we have our intrepid reporter Jack Nutting?
Well, Stockholm is slipping into what people refer to in this country as springtime, but that mostly means it's kind of rainy and cold and windy, and I'm still wearing just as much outdoor clothing as I was a month ago. So what can you do? But the sun is shining a little bit more, so that's okay.
Oh, good. Well, as the midsummer comes up, the sun will be shining almost all the time, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the cool part. I mean, it makes up for the incredibly dark and cold winters that at least in the summertime we have a lot of sunshine.
Yeah. Get your vitamin D. Speaking of vitamin D, Paul Hagstrom from Boston, are you getting any of that vitamin D out there?
Well, I would be, except that it's almost too hot. It's getting close to 90 now.
Oh.
So, 90 in these
oh my goodness.
Imperial degrees. But, yeah.
Now, it feels like it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about you being buried in snow.
Right. I remember, yeah. But, you know, it's...
It needs to make up its mind.
Yeah, at least there is weather. Keeps things interesting.
That's true. Well, speaking of keeping things interesting, hey guys, I think that we should kickstart something. I have a host topic today, and I'm not afraid to use it. So here's something that I was thinking about over the last couple weeks, and I get you guys' impression on this. You know, there's lots of modern-day add-ons for our beloved retro computers. Virtual disk drives is something that you're always hearing about. On the Apple II, of course, I know the CFFA 3000 is a big hit. The SD to IEC devices on the Commodore are a big deal. There's the SIO to PC on the Atari. And, of course, there are similar solutions for TRS-80, Sinclair, you go down the line. Also, internet connection devices have been coming on for a lot of these computers so that you can, I guess you can't surf the web exactly. I don't think they're HTML5 compliant, but you can get on the internet. You can download stuff. As I was thinking about all this, I was thinking, what's missing? What do we not have? What product niche or improvement on a product or something like that would you like to see for your favorite micro? And I guess I'll go in the same order that I did the introductions. Michael, you have any thoughts on this?
Well, for me, it'd have to be a reliable and high-quality video converter. Too many of my machines I need to plug into a CRT, and I'm down to one working green screen monitor for my Apple II, and even it's getting a little bit on the wobbly side. I've played with various video converters, and sometimes the results are good, and sometimes the results are shocking. So I'd love excellent composite to DVI out, or HDMI, so I can plug that in. And what I'd really like to start seeing is actual new video cards for those of our machines that can take expansion cards, so that you can just go straight to off the bus into a LCD monitor. But there are so many solutions out there that are almost getting there. I think I really want to see something which will grab me and make me want to buy a unit or two so I can hook my machines up.
I completely second that notion. What a great idea, because you're right that the CRTs, eventually they're all going to be gone, and we know that. And also I've read some of the reports on the converters, and it is hit and miss. So, great idea. That's a Kickstarter. Jack, what do you think? Top that.
Well, I don't think I can top that. I'm going to just third that, which you already seconded, because this is exactly what I had in mind. And what I have in mind is actually a slight twist on this. So, one of the main things I like to do with my Atari 130XE is plug it into a nice big flat screen TV we have in the living room and play games and stuff. And it works fine. It has a composite out, this machine, and I've got an adapter. Actually, it's so this TV, well, I'm in Europe, so it has a SCART connector, and the SCART has composite inputs on it. So that works fine, except for the fact that I can't really choose sort of how the screen that is being output is mapped to the actual video screen. So, you know, the video screen has a certain sort of aspect ratio that is not the same typically as what a classic computer outputs. And in my case, it always ends up being that like the top quarter of my television is just blank, and everything that my Atari is outputting is down in the bottom three quarters and kind of stretched in a weird way. And it would be nice to be able to sort of control that. And of course, the TV has some built-in, like, that has an aspect ratio button for switching between different aspect ratios. But I'd rather have something that is completely tunable, have a device that sits between my composite output of one thing and ideally an HDMI input into a TV, and can take the output that I'm generating and tweak it exactly how I want to make the thing stretch to fill the screen in just the way that I want to do it. That's what I would like.
Nice. And I think with modern digital signal processing, you probably could do something like that. I wouldn't know how to do it, but I bet it's possible.
No, I wouldn't know either, but somebody should be able to. Should, for someone, that is a piece of cake.
Yeah. You guys listening out there?
We got to find that someone.
Come on. We're handing you Kickstarters. This is free. Free money. Paul, what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I guess I could fourth that, I suppose. It does seem like, you know, essentially what we're trying to do is get sort of external stuff for the parts that are breaking, you know. So the media is a big one, and, you know, the video is one that is coming. And it's surprising that it has not been solved yet, I guess. Well, so I'm not sure I'm coming up with a good idea for like a new Kickstarter, but one category of thing that is pretty neat that just came out. There's a guy / company, Nishida Radio, that makes, it's a SD card solution for Apple II computers. And one of the, you know, so there are a few of these sorts of things, but one of the innovations that he just put in was the ability to use now what is it called? But it's basically a Wi-Fi enabled SD card. So I think people use these on cameras and things like this, so that you can take the picture and it immediately just jumps over to your computer. But this allows you to, without connecting anything, without moving the SD card around, without doing anything, you can, you know, write a program on your Mac and send it to your Apple over Wi-Fi and then boot. So that kind of incremental advancement is also quite nifty. But I think that kind of advancement is also useful, even in categories that we've already covered.
And I was going to say something about Wi-Fi also. I think for a lot of these computers, you're seeing these internet cards, but a lot of the solutions don't have any Wi-Fi capabilities, so you're stuck trying to hardwire to your router, wherever that is in your house, or build some sort of wireless bridge, which is doable. I took an old access point that I had that I could load some open source stuff on, and I turned it into a Wi-Fi bridge. And that works, but it's a little clunky. I mean, it would be fun to have Wi-Fi directly on these computers. I know, you know, gripe, gripe, moan, moan, moan. We give you Ethernet, you know. Now what more do you want? But I want Wi-Fi.
So, among other things.
So yeah. That solution that you're just talking about with the Wi-Fi-enabled SD card, that's really pretty cool.
Yeah, the concept should be able to be moved across to other platforms, but yeah, it's getting rid of the wires and the cables, because many of us just have to find a small area where they can set up their old machines, and invariably it's not a friendly environment for getting all the cables hooked up. And as it is, we've got enough cables already, just putting all the bits and pieces together. So getting that wireless connection for the disk images is great, because that solves two problems with the one thing. But yeah, perhaps we need some more cable eliminators, so that we have serial connections over Wi-Fi for various parts of our setups.
Maybe that's actually what we need to concentrate on as a Kickstarter for, like, a rotating display storage unit that you can put, you know, one computer. You can put a set of, like a CD changer kind of thing. Today I want to work on that, you know, the Cocoa.
Very nice.
Yeah, give it a spin and see where it lands.
Even better.
The retro computer roulette.
Oh no, I didn't fasten them down.
I guess one other category of thing that I did want to mention was the, and I think this came up before, but, and again, I'm sort of sticking with the Apple II, but these things are applicable to other platforms as well. There's a card called the Carte Blanche and Carte Blanche 2 now, which is an FPGA card, and that seems like, for some reason, it didn't seem like the Carte Blanche 1 really got used for much, and I don't know, I'm not sure whether this is going to happen much with the Carte Blanche 2, but I think essentially it's kind of like a chameleon card, you know, a card that you can put in the Apple II and make it into whatever kind of card you want. And that seems really quite interesting. These are pretty expensive right now, but it might be neat to see more of that kind of solution, particularly if FPGAs themselves end up getting any cheaper.
That's true. And some of the FPGA development environments have become more accessible. So, neat. All right. Well, those are all great ideas. I'm going to move us along to listener feedback. Terry Stewart sent us well wishes for our 100th episode. Thanks very much, Tez. We appreciate it. We appreciate you listening. Also, one other thing, Oscar Vermeulens, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, we've talked before about his PDP-8 little simulator, the PIDP-8i. That kid is getting a lot of interest. There's a famous information security podcaster that I listen to. His name is Steve Gibson. He has a show called Security Now on Twit with Leo Laporte. So he tweeted about this particular kit. He's a PDP-8 enthusiast from way back. He has some of the SBC6120 kits that had come out from Spare Time Gizmos. He's got them up on his shelf. When they do the show, you can see the blinking lights in the background. But him tweeting about it generated an avalanche of interest for Oscar. So now he has the good problem of figuring out how to meet all the demand. It's a great little kit. I think you guys have seen it. We talked about it before. I'm glad to see it getting such good attention.
Yeah, I just, it was earlier this week, I got an email from Oscar just giving an update on how the project's going. So I'm really looking forward to sending him my money and getting that kit, because it's exactly what I need to put my Raspberry Pi into, something that's interesting and useful all at the same time.
Yeah, it's just so cool. So go, Oscar. And he's doing it right, too, that he's not taking the money before he knows he can deliver. So it's a, you know, class act all the way. All right, let's talk about some news. I guess I'll go first. A little bit more listener feedback, so I'm kind of doing a blended segue here. Tony sent us a news article about Steven Spielberg's father, Arnold Spielberg. Now you're thinking, what would Steven Spielberg's father be known for? Perhaps something in the movies? But no, my friends, he designed the General Electric 225 mainframe. And that was an important box for a couple different reasons, probably the biggest of which is that it was used to create Dartmouth BASIC, the BASIC that evolved into all the incarnations that we know and love. And also, the gentleman who created the 6502, the engineered the 6502, Chuck Peddle, I remembered that he had worked for GE, and it turns out that the first computer that he ever worked on was a GE 225 as well. So, man, just a lot of creative genius from the Spielberg family, wouldn't you guys say?
Yeah, that is pretty interesting.
It is, like you say, I think I would assume that Steven Spielberg's father would have been, you know, more in what we think of as the creative industries, like the film industry, that sort of thing. But it's very interesting that you know, totally different thing, and yet still a very important and notable output.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know the site, but gereports.com is where you can find it, and we'll have a link up in the show notes, and you can go take a look at the article, read about it in some more detail, and see some neat old pictures. So let's reboot on to the next topic. Jack?
Well, the next topic is an article I found entitled Welcome to the Great Atari Reboot. This is at a site called BGR.com, which I'm not familiar with either. But they've interviewed the current president of Atari, Fred Chesney, the French fellow who bought Atari out of bankruptcy a couple of years ago. And we've been talking about Atari now and then over the past few months and the sort of, you know, weird twilight existence of this company. And it's interesting because, they have plans and they have, you know, intentions of trying to do stuff. It's all at this point, it's all around software and various things. And some of what they're talking about sounds interesting. You know, some we've talked a bit about they're doing some things where they are kind of reviving old IP, like Asteroids, into new games that are not that similar to what Asteroids ever was. But then they have some new things, like they have some LGBT-themed game called Pride Fest coming soon, which seems to be, you know, interesting. It's like a social simulator. They seem to be kind of stretching and doing some different things. So we'll see. After reading this, I feel at least a slightly bit more positive to Atari than I have been lately. So it's worth checking out.
All right. So the Atari brand still living on. They're still trying to do something with it, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it is. Every mention that Atari has gotten in recent years basically has been negative, as far as like the current brand holders. But it would be nice if they did go on to do something interesting in the future. It would also be nice if they would, you know, lay off the litigation.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Focus on creating something new and interesting instead of harassing people who are working with the old stuff.
Well, that's precisely it. As long as what they're wanting to do is actually interesting and not just slapping the logo onto something and getting it out to market.
Right.
Yeah, I can kind of relate. The Commodore brand has been dragged all over the place, sometimes in good ways and sometimes it's been dragged through the mud. Since the original Commodore went out of business, the poor old Chicken Lips has kind of had a little rough time. But Michael, the Bletchley Girls, is this a new daytime serial?
Not quite. It's a new book that's coming out. I believe the e-book is available now and that the paperback is coming soon. But it's basically the story of 15 women who were working, 15 of all of the women who were working at Bletchley Park during World War II. What a lot of people might not realize is that women in computing has basically gone right back to the beginning of it. and I'm sort of referring more to the modern digital computing. And the women at Bletchley Park basically outnumbered the men 3-1. It's not just a case of men in the army off to war. We're talking about all the people who supported and used the machines, did all the code breaking. It's just an amazing story of people coming from various walks of life, there was no IT life for people to come into. So you got people coming from all walks of life to use these new machines, crack the codes, it's just an amazing story. And £8.99, so I think that works out to just under $15 US and just under $20 Australian. So if you're after a different computer read, I think that you couldn't go too far wrong getting a copy of The Bletchley Girls.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting. And there was actually not very long ago a drama called The Bletchley Circle that was also sort of focused on this, yes, this same kind of set of events. Fewer main characters, but
it was basically what happens when you have all these smart, intelligent people in one place. Of course, they go out and solve mysteries,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, right, exactly. The TV show is, I think, a bit sort of more dramatic in that way. But it was still interesting to watch. And I'm sure this will be interesting to read.
Yeah, I would love to read this. Good find, Michael. Paul, speaking of things to read, what has recently made it to the Internet Archive?
Well, as it happens, the...
tons of stuff, in fact, but...
Many, many things. But one of the things that I had been waiting for a long time is Soft Talk magazine, which is... It's come up before, but it's a Apple II publication that ran from 1980 to 1984. It was one of the main magazines. And in its sort of heyday, it was probably like... some of these issues were like over 200 pages long, in 1983. They were really, it had sort of like a fun approach to, it was sort of the industry. I mean, it was everybody loved this magazine that read it. I'll mention also the Soft Talk Apple project. Although the publishers point out that the magazine was never called Soft Talk Apple, even though there were a couple of other, there's this ST Mac and a Soft Talk for the IBM PC, but Soft Talk for the Apple II was just Soft Talk. But anyway, the Soft Talk Apple project was is this sort of planned project to take the old magazines and kind of gamify them in terms of doing research and making data connections and filling in stories that didn't actually make it to print and that kind of thing, in order to sort of kind of use this as a skeleton around which to put a lot of historical searchable information. So the project itself sounds quite interesting. It's been going on for a while, and basically that group had collected together all of the issues and just, it was probably less than a month ago, delivered them over to the Internet Archive for scanning. And so they've been scanned all but, I think, maybe like four issues or so, and they're finally up for you to download and read and so forth. So even if you don't want to participate in the game information part, it's really nice to have these available. They're a lot of fun to read, I think. So anyone who has interest in the Apple II or even of the kind of the era, it's worth taking a look at any of these issues.
You know, if you were to walk along and trip and fall into the Internet Archive, it's possible you could never emerge. I mean, there's probably enough reading material in there to last two or three lifetimes at this point.
I think if you tripped into the Internet Archive, they'd have you into one of their big high-speed scanners and you'd be digitized along with all the other content.
Right. Are you saying they're building the world of Tron over there and scan people into their system? Let's hope so.
I'd have a backup.
But anyway, yes, it's true. It's true. There's much, much stuff on the Internet Archive, but I can vouch for this. Soft Talk is definitely worth reading.
Nice. All right. Well, we will have a link for that as well up in the show notes, as well as all the stuff that we talk about. You guys know that, rcrpodcast.com. So, Jack, there's a Sinclair Music problem, and some people have solved it. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, so the Sinclair ZX machine, what is it called? The ZX Spectrum.
Nicely said. I would not have said it that way, and
thank
then
you.
Carrington would have, you know, beaten me upon the head and shoulders.
I would have to deputize for Carrington on that.
I know someone would get me if I said ZX. So the ZX Spectrum machine that I've still never actually touched one of these things. But I know it was hugely popular in England and other places. And apparently there was sort of this problem that was posed in its 1982 manual where one of the chapters explains how to use the beep command in BASIC to make some sounds and explains how to play the funeral march from Mahler's First Symphony, which is a well-known little piece of music. And the chapter ends suggesting some examples to what more things you can do with beep. It suggests, hey, how about program the computer to play not just that, but the whole rest of the First Symphony, which was actually impossible to do, as it turns out, at least impossible with one Spectrum. And so what has happened most recently is a guy named Matt Westcott was asked to tackle some Spectrum stuff for a museum at Oxford. The Oxford Museum of the History of Science, they asked this guy to tackle some Spectrum stuff, and he remembered this problem and said, what can we do about this? And the solution was to actually network together a whole bunch of Spectrums to play this piece of music. And there's a video showing how it works and details about how it was done, and it looks pretty cool. And it's interesting to see something that was just kind of a throwaway example that was placed in a book 30-odd years ago that someone today grabbed onto and said, hey, let's try and actually do that. So, pretty cool.
You got to wonder what the author of that problem thinks. It's like, wow.
It actually says, there's actually a quote from I don't know if it's the author of the book, but the creator of Spectrum BASIC. There's a quote from him saying, if I had known that all I had to do was set a seemingly impossible Spectrum exercise, and then, a mere 30 years later, people and Spectrums would band together and carry it out, we could have achieved great things for the world.
Very good. With the ZX Spectrum. And Michael, continuing on that theme of great things for the world with the ZX Spectrum, you've got a news item as well.
Well, I suppose it qualifies as a news item. As many of our listeners would be aware, I do enjoy my Lego. So I was browsing through Lego Ideas, which in itself is a great website where you propose an idea, do a bit of a model, get comments and support, and if you can get 10,000 supporters, Lego will consider your project and maybe, lots of asterisks and footnotes there, move it on into a kit. So this one, funnily enough, is for a ZX Spectrum mini computer done in Lego. It's a very simplistic representation of it, but it does capture, in my opinion, the essentials of the ZX Spectrum. It's something which I think most people could manage to get the pieces themselves. A little bit of decal artwork might be needed, but you can be creative with your laser or inkjet printers and see how you go. And I just thought I'd also just remind our listeners that Chris McVeigh is also a great Lego modeler, and he does a superb line of retro technology-inspired models, including many of our favorite older machines and other pieces of technology from the 80s and earlier. So I'll include links to both of those, but Chris's site over at Power Pig, I believe it's called, he has a great range. And when you're finished looking at all his technology items, he has some other wonderful non-technology models there that you can actually either purchase or get the interactive plans and make it up out of your own pieces.
Cool.
I love his My First Radio here.
Yes.
It looks like a Zenith Transoceanic, just saying, which wasn't actually my first radio, but it was in the mix. I even have one today that looks almost exactly like that model.
Oh, from radios, cameras, televisions, arcade machines.
Right.
He's got quite a superb range there. So if you want to pop over, see if there's something there that brings back your memories. There's cool. That radio you're talking about there. So he's got My First Radio 70s edition for $58.50.
Mm-hmm.
So So all the parts that you need for that.
Very nice.
Neat. And it looks like there's a TV displaying a 2600 display. Oh, and actually it looks like the 2600 is there too. Yeah.
There is a 2600, yes.
Yep. When I was looking at the ZX Spectrum, you know, the Lego proposal, it occurs to me that this is a giant computer compared to the size of the people. If I'm not mistaken, their feet are one little nub apart.
You're talking about the minifigs.
Yeah,
for sure. This is not at all scaled for minifigs.
Yes, I think we'll say not to scale.
And not to Lego scale. Oh goodness, that Apple II is so cute too. I got to stop.
Oh, there's a VIC-20.
Back to the show. Yes, there
adorable
is.
Adorable stuff.
And of course, our listeners can't see anything that we're talking about. So
but if you go to
that page,
yeah, Power Pigs builds and things. It's That's quite right. pleasing.
If you're not into Lego before you go there, you will be afterwards.
And soon after that, you will be poor.
If you're not completely turned off of podcasts by the time you're done listening to RCR, then Paul has another podcast that you might want to listen to.
Oh, yes. This is actually very brief because we mentioned it, I think, last time. But there's a BBC Radio 4 show called Codes That Changed the World, and it's five episodes, starting with Fortran, COBOL, and BASIC, and then goes on to Java, and then the newest one has to do with kind of the proliferation of languages since. But this is actually available as a podcast, at least through iTunes. Probably you can find the RSS link to put it into some other player as well. But so we'll have a link to that if you want to hear it. You don't need to be in the UK. You don't need to be able to use iPlayer. You can just listen. You can even listen straight from the web. So, and I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. And speaking of listening to something, listen, don't touch that dial, because the RCR will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
They buy the home computer from Texas Instruments and get a $100 rebate. That's a powerful computer, the one with all the memory, right? And the tons of software. $100 rebate? Right. Details at the store and get $100, right? Okay, I'll tell them. $100.
Get a $100 rebate on the home computer from Texas Instruments.
This is $100 for the people, right? Now, you're not fooling.
And we're back. And I get to talk now about a gift idea for the host. And as it turns out, this doesn't have to be for me because I already have one. And that's why I can vouch that these are just the cutest thing. It is a bubblegum tin, but it looks like an old classic 70s, 80s Atari joystick. And even the little top thing moves like the regular joystick would. And then you pop it open, and it's not the size of the regular joystick. It's a little smaller than that, but then you pop it open, and it has wondrous gum on the inside as well. So you got to get one of these for, and you know, this kind of doubles. It could be for a retro computer enthusiast, or it could be for like a 2600 enthusiast. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think? You ever seen one of these?
Or a gum enthusiast.
Or a gum enthusiast, yes.
It says they are fruit-flavored pong-shaped gum pieces. I don't even know what that means.
Pong-shaped.
Yeah, they look like a pixel.
Well, in fact, they do. They look like little pixels, which, of course, you know, many gums look like. So I think it's a stretch to say it's a Pong pixel. But, you know, I can't call them a liar.
It is very cute.
It looks pretty cool. And it's cheap.
It's cheap, yeah. I have to balance out because Carrington always gets the gifts that are like $900 or something like that.
Well, that's because Carrington wants us to buy them for him.
That's right. Kickstarter. Just talking about it. Kickstarter for Carrington.
Now, I wonder if you could get this with actually a working joystick. Yeah, for $4, that's excellent.
Yeah, they're cute. They're cute. So, and mine's empty now, but I'm still keeping it. I'll get some more gum. But we should buy some more things. I will tell you what I want to buy, and this is courtesy of, it's either Co-op Stew or Coop Stew. I didn't have a name, I just have the friend of the email, but that listener was nice enough to send us a link. As they put in the email, this is something that you don't see every day. And especially, you probably don't see it every day in Australia. Two DEC VAX 11750s. And this isn't the cheap version. This is the deluxe leather seats kind of version with all of the works. You guys really should bring up this eBay picture if you haven't.
We are here, yeah. But at home you should be doing this as well.
You should. Now, there is, right underneath the RX floppies there, there's some open cabinet space, and I wonder what was there before. It strikes me that maybe it could have been a couple of RLO2 drives or, you know, who knows, actually. So there's some empty rack space in here. It's not completely complete, but the thing is beautiful. Right now, it's going for $2,000 Australian, and I have to admit that I don't know the current exchange rate between that and the U.S.
We're about 80 cents at the moment, one of our dollars, 80 of your cents.
Okay, so this would be a little cheaper.
Yeah, on my screen, eBay has translated it to 15.80.60.
But I don't think they really mean free international postage.
Down in the notes, it's basically got postage freight is not, in uppercase, free. So right. It's local pickup from Melbourne down in Victoria. Funnily enough, this one also came in one of my searches as well. So I'm glad to see there's someone else out there keeping an eye on the larger retro computer devices that are out there here in Australia. But it's quite a nice list of bits there. And if you've got the space and the cash, this is a great one to get hold of.
Oh, hey, wait a second. I think so. If you scroll down in the pictures, one of the things that's shown in the pictures are two RLO1 disk drives.
Yeah, I was wondering if those were supposed to be in the spaces.
That's what seems like would fit into that space. So, huh?
This has quite a bit of documentation. I mean, I can imagine that you would need more than this to actually know how to run it. But there's a lot of paper that comes with this as well.
Oh, extensive documentation comes with this. So this is definitely one to go to the link and scroll through, as well as all of the hardware that comes with it, and I love those large drives. There's plenty of tapes and other documentation along with it. It's definitely worth the money if you're down here in Australia and you have somewhere for it. I have neither.
And even some of the disk packs for the RLO1.
Mm.
Which are, you know, kind of increasingly hard to find. I think the RLL2s are a little easier to find. I have 30-something of those, but much to the chagrin of my family, as they're really big. But, cool. Anyway, that's my pick. So I think I had probably the largest physical object on eBay this time. So, Jack, what have you got?
Well, I have something that may be the smallest. It's pretty small anyway. This is a vintage 1977 Tandy/Radio Shack Science Fair digital computer kit. And looking at this thing, I cannot understand how anyone calls this a digital computer in any sense. There are lots of pictures showing what the parts are. This is something that has never been played with or used. All of the parts look like they're still in their little sealed plastic baggies. And basically what it looks like, it's a thing that makes kind of a grid of sort of numbers and things and some buttons. And there are some, it looks like it's kind of like for setting up some sort of little quiz type machine where you press a button and something lights up. And so it looks like you assemble this whole thing and there are some plastic buttons and some wires and it does something. There's clearly no sort of CPU here or anything. So
no, I can tell you how this worked. I had its predecessor. And
okay.
Radio Shack didn't market the predecessor very long because it was really badly designed. The little ears on the sliders would come jumping out when you tried to use it. And so it frustrated me as a kid. My parents took it back. But then they got smart and made this one. It's just basically a set of logic gates. That's all it is.
Okay.
There is no CPU. You're just making kind of, you know, ands and ors and coming up with a solution. But it actually will teach you a little bit of Boolean algebra. You know, you can get the concept of binary on or off sort of thinking with this. So it was pretty neat for the day or two that I had it before we took it back.
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty neat. It looks like it's, if nothing else, a fun thing to assemble. Like, I like that it has a lot of little parts and that it's old and it's all still in plastic and seems like it's in good shape. And if it actually has some use, like you're saying, that it actually is teaching me the principles of logic gates, then all the better. Costs $15, which is probably a lot less than it cost in those days. Take the money of those days and multiply it upwards. So what the heck? Although actually for me, shipping to Sweden is $30. So forget it. But somebody else might want to have it. Anyway, it's got 6 days left in the auction right now. And it also has a buy it now price of $26.
Mm. Actually, it's not too badly priced. I've picked up one of these a little while ago, just for something different for my collection, sort of what was out there in the kids' educational toys, if for want of a better word, during that time. So now I've got this actual one there. Box on mine's not quite in as good a condition as this one, it's quite interesting. As Earl said, it's a good introduction back in the day to your logic processing and gates, a little bit of binary work. If you're into that kind of thing, it's quite interesting.
I was going to ask, one of the pictures, actually a couple of pictures, feature one of the sliding cards that seems to say, you know, farmer, wolf, goat, cabbage. And I was going to ask, you know, if you have the documentation, what is it that they're talking about? But surely that's crossing the river. Did you ever get into it enough to know what?
Sure.
But it seemed ridiculous, and I was going to just sort of like jokingly comment about it, except that it must be, you know, if we're talking logic games, you know, it's how you get across the river.
I think it is for that traditional. Right. How do you get everyone across the river without everyone either eating or being eaten by the others?
Cool.
But what we did before we actually had computers.
Yeah.
But what we did after we got past binary is some guys got together and decided it would be easier to program in a high-level language like Fortran.
Oh, what an amazing coincidence, Earl. I just happen to have an eBay listing here for Fortran.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Well, tell us.
Well, if you've got a spare $350, or it comes out to about $275 US, there's the Microsoft Optimizing Compiler for DOS. Now, I like collecting languages and operating systems, but I think I might have to let someone with deeper pockets go after this one. The cover is not in great condition, but the box that the cover goes around seems to be in pretty good condition. It seems to have all of the media and all of the manuals, and they've also gone and made 3.5-inch backups of the 5.25-inch original discs. So there's a good chance that people would be able to get this installed on a modern machine, say under DOSBox, or for the Macintosh users, Boxer. Both are great apps for getting DOS software up and running on modern day hardware. So if you're into programming languages and you want to have a little bit of Fortran, I believe Fortran was also covered in that podcast we were talking about the different codes.
The codes that changed the world.
Yep, I'll definitely say that Fortran changed the world for me. This was the first it was the first computer language I learned. So lots of memories there, but I think I'm going to have to let this one go.
Well, then I guess we'll have to move on to Paul. So Paul, I'm kind of shocked you got multiple items this time.
Yep, and they're all sort of organized by a theme, probably more than reasonableness in actually buying them. But they're kind of neat. So the first one is a VT100. I was looking for 100 based things, and I was actually finding it difficult to search for the VT100. I'm not sure exactly why it was hard to why they weren't coming up, but several searches that I tried didn't reveal anything. But this one actually looks kind of nice. It is, you know, surely we all know what a VT100 looks like. This one is being sold for $1,200, which is way out of my range. But it has an interesting little add-on, which makes it, you know, somewhat interesting to talk about. Otherwise, it's a terminal. But it has some kind of graphics card and external thingamajig that lets you control probably where the picture goes. And I'm not sure exactly, but it's called a Selenar. And the terminal itself looks very yellow. it's really quite impressively yellow. But anyway, it was neat to see. Someday I would like to have one of these, but I have never come across one that I could afford.
Well, and yeah, I don't think they'll get $1,200 for that, unless that card, which I don't know what it does either. I'm not familiar with that particular device. That could be one of those really super rare, desirable things. But anyway, don't let me slow you down.
Yeah. Okay. And so the second thing in my 100-based list is there's a TRS-80 Model 100 set, which looked kind of nice, partly because, I mean, there are dozens of these on eBay at any given time. But this one has actually a printer with it and quite a number of manuals. So it looks fairly reasonable. The price is not, but you know, you can take a look at it. It's being listed for $300, and it is not. I would be very surprised if it would if it gets that, even with the printer.
Well, but like the terminal, it does have a make offer.
Yeah, so you can try making an offer. I think it's you know, it's worth something. It's neat. It looks like it's in relatively good shape. The screen comes on. And okay, and then the third, the one that you might actually be able to afford in the 100 theme list that I have here, is the Apple Macintosh mouse, part number M0100, which is the mouse that came on the original Macintosh. That part number M0100 was shared by a number of variants of this mouse, but this one is actually has the original Mac color scheme, so it's sort of brown and beige rather than the later platinum ones. And it works only on these early, it works on the Lisa and it works on the early Macs, but because it has, I think it looks like it's a 9-pin connector, but that's a special, you know, D type connector. So those are my auctions for episode 100.
Cool. And I see what you're doing there.
Yeah.
With the 100. Nicely done. All right. Well, we've spent all of our money, I think. So I guess we better close out. And I guess I'll start. I don't have a heck of a lot to say, except that I did a little soldering work yesterday, and it felt good to haul out the soldering iron. I soldered up a Wi-Fi chip that I got for some of my microcontroller stuff, but I also repaired an old cable that was just sitting there taunting me. I mean, when I'd originally made this cable, it was a video cable for either the VIC-20 or the Atari 800. And I used really bad soldering techniques and some electrical tape that didn't quite hang on through the years. And so the thing was all sticky and yucky. And it kept taunting me. So yesterday I fixed it. I used, you know, legitimate heat shrink tubing and good soldering technique, and you know, now I don't have to feel bad every time I take out that cable. So that's something, right?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So, Jack, what have you got for us here as we close out?
Well, I don't have too much to throw in here, except that today I happened to go to the Stockholm Mini Maker Fair. First time I've actually been to a Maker Fair, and it was actually a lot of fun. And you mentioned soldering. They actually had a little sort of learn to solder station where you could spend a couple of bucks to get a little sort of kit and have you solder in a couple of LEDs and solder in a little battery holder to make a little robot with flashing lights. And so I got one of my daughters to do that with me. She'd never soldered anything before in her life. And she was done with her kit about 20 seconds after I was done with mine. So it tells
cool.
me that she's a natural born solderer, which is awesome. And that I'm out of shape when it comes to soldering. But it was good, and both of our things worked. So, Maker Faires, double plus good for everybody.
Very neat. That's exciting stuff.
Excellent. Maybe you can have her make cables for you now in the future.
Yeah. Finally, someone to make my cables for me.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
Michael, what have you got for us?
Well, not much happening, but the biggie to me is, hurrah, 100 episodes. So woo-hoo! I'd like to say a big thank you to David Grealish for getting the ball rolling. And again, also a big thank you to you, Earl, and to Carrington for all the hard work that you've put in keeping the show rolling along. So thank you very much.
Well, I don't feel like it's been work. This show is like tons of fun to do, but I'll second you with David Grealish. That was just awesome for him to start out and went through a couple different incarnations from the time that he originally kicked it off. It morphed into the roundtable that we have today. And all of them are good. And so, you know, go back. If you're new to the podcast, go back, start at episode one, because they're just, all of them were fun. So, yeah, I totally agree. And Paul, what about you? Land this plane.
as usual, I've been sort of just doing miscellaneous stuff. One sort of interesting thing that I came across, I've had it for a while, but it was a disc that was just sort of in a collection of things that I got a while back, and it appears to have, I'm not sure how official, but some MacWrite documents of like a draft of the Lisa technical manual on it. So I'm kind of going through that and trying to figure out what exactly it is, how officially Apple it is. It might actually not be officially Apple. It might have been somebody's, you know, homebrew project to improve on the photocopied mess that Apple sent out. But it's kind of neat. So I'm just sort of digging through images and scanning stuff, and we'll continue to do that, I think.
Yeah, and kudos to you and the other folks who do that archiving work, because that's just so useful and great, you know, for people interested in this stuff today and also for posterity. That's neat stuff. All right. Well, that's it for this show, except for one thing. None of us on the show are mothers, but it's pretty clear that everyone had a mother at some point. Wouldn't you guys agree? So I want to say from the U.S., where it's Mother's Day, happy Mother's Day.
Yes, agreed. Seconded.
Third.
It's a happy Mother's Day down here in Australia as well. So
awesome. So, you can find the show notes for all the RCR shows at rcrpodcast.com. If you have a hankering to discuss it online, you can find us at vintage-computer.com/VCforum, which is just a great forum for a lot of different reasons. It's a great retro computing forum. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we actually tweet nowadays. Since Ken took that over, man, he's doing great guns with that. So follow us and you might actually get some tweets. That's at RCR Podcast. You can send feedback, which we love to read, at feedback@rcrpodcast.com. And we are a proud member of the Throwback Network, throwbacknetwork.net. And if you like the show, please write a review over on iTunes. It helps other people find us, and it helps to inflate our already gargantuan egos. And until next time, Retro Compute!